Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Transformation Cafe with your host, Robin Misevich. Transformation Cafe, a weekly half hour of light, topical conversation about health, wellness, happiness, personal growth, spirituality, and other insights. We're glad you're here. Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul. Now, let's get started and introduce our diners for tonight's show.
Well, hey, everyone. I want to welcome you to the Transformation Cafe. I'm your host, Robin Misevich. And tonight, we are back in the Cafe Book Club. Ooh, we're going over Getting the Love That You Really Want by Harville. Hendrix and his wife, Helen Hunt. And say Harville. Let's say Harville three times. Harville. And my wonderful co-host, Miss Michelle. Miss Michelle, how are you tonight?
Oh, I'm becoming conscious.
Oh, I know. And it's a day-to-day, moment-to-moment thing, isn't it? Oh, my goodness. Yes. What is that? Yes. So we are in chapter 6, which is about, we're finally halfway through the book. Well, it's about halfway. And we're starting to talk about becoming conscious, having the conscious relationship. And yes, this book is about relationships and talking about marriage, but I think it's really good that we wanted to kind of broaden the conversation and have it about consciousness with every relationship, because every relationship is here really to teach us and to help us grow and do what we have. And that's really kind of what this whole show is going to be about and what this chapter is about. So we're named it the 10 Steps of Conscious Relationship. So there's actually 10 different things of being able to look at this as a comprehensive view that was part of the chapter. But before we go there, I really love, you know, one thing Harville does on each one of these chapters is he has a quote. And the one on chapter 6 is, become seldom and never does a marriage develop into an individual relationship smoothly without crisis. There is no birth of consciousness without pain. And that was from Carl Jung. And I think that's really true. I think that you get to the place where, especially if once you get past the honeymoon, you know, phase, and Harville talks about that, that, you know, you start, you think this person's going to solve all your problems and, you know, complete you from all the things that you had, wounds that you got as childhood, and they're just going to, you know, put you in a pretty little bow, and you're good to go. But that's not really how it actually happens. We get attracted to those people in our lives that are really there to help us grow and change and to bring up all those things that we really want to heal from our childhood, where we basically got, you know, broken up and not having a sense of ourselves. So Miss Michelle's going to just interject here anytime she feels like it.
Okay.
Right, Michelle?
I'll add something in there. Well, in my opinion, the whole purpose of life is to move into more and more self-empowerment. So, of course, there will be no consciousness without pain, because if we're looking for somebody else to, if we're going to give somebody else our power and they're going to be the ones who make us okay, then that defeats the purpose of life.
Mm,
so,
good point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you for this pain. Thank you for breaking my heart.
Thank you for breaking my heart. And like, that's a brand new version for Elton John, right? Thank you for breaking my heart. People are like, I don't think that's going to be a 10-top hit. I don't think it's going to work so well. But, you know, we're moving in that consciousness, so hopefully we'll move in that direction. So I love what you just shared. I think that's really good.
Yeah, and I just want to say to Harville in the book, we're going into the second part. This is part two of the book. And he does start out this chapter redeeming the old brain a little bit, because the old brain is getting such a negative knock because it's creating all of these self-defeating tactics to get our needs met. But it's really imperative to honor the old brain, because it has our fundamental drives of being safe, being healed, and being whole.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just want to make sure that we just don't look at it as a negative thing. It also is what drives us to seek our well-being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we really can't have one without the other.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit right before the show, and I just said, you know, we're going for a new merger. We're going to need the old brain with the new brain. And, you know, yeah,
the
getting a
sense
of that. The old
brain just needs the guidance of the new brain,
mm-hmm.
but they work
right.
together.
Yeah, and they work together beautifully. And I think part of that is we're going to kind of get into that with a comprehensive view about, especially with one of the points that really talks about that. So let's just jump into that part of it. So thank you for that, too, y'all. I think it's really important that we really realize that, you know, every facet of us is really here to help us to heal and grow and expand. And, you know, just because I think ultimately our goal in relationships is just to grow. And if you're willing to say, yes, I need, you know, I always, the one thing I think that really helped me when I was going on my spiritual, part of my spiritual growth was having beginner's mind. And if it can come to every relationship and come to every conversation with beginner's mind of like, what if I never had a conversation with this person before? Well, what could I learn? What could I know? And really that's kind of true. And actually it's kind of true. It is true because we're just growing and changing so much, especially nowadays with all the amount of information and everything that basically you get bombarded with every day, that we are new people. And so, you know, who are you now? I think is a really great question. Like,
and
hi,
beginner
introduce yourself.
Mind
and, you
of
know.
Who am I and who are they?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And it's like, what if I never met this person before? And in a way, that's so true. I think that's a really good thing to kind of have as a nugget in the back of your mind about, this is a brand new person in front of me. Who are you now?
Well, that's,
you know?
That's what Bruce Lipton attributes the honeymoon effect to.
Mm.
Is that we haven't known people long enough to put them in the box.
Mm-hmm.
And we
mm-hmm.
haven't known ourselves long enough in relation to that person to put ourselves in a box. And that's
mm-hmm.
what creates the honeymoon effect. But over time,
well,
we make decisions about who people
mm-hmm.
are and who we are. And that's what ends the honeymoon. That's just what
yeah.
you
think. Well, and it's interesting, too, because like some people have said, you know, when it comes to, you know, what's the secret of marriage? And it's like we're always on our honeymoon. We're always discovering about each other. We're always learning about who are you now, you know. So it's like, you know, can we live in a honeymoon phase? Let's kind of redefine what a honeymoon phase is, maybe, you know.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily being naive, you know, not being a naive place, but a place of wonder and a place of willing. I'm willing to ask questions.
Yeah.
You know,
and childhood
that's a really
awe.
Good. Yeah. And coming from a place of awe, of like, what is this beautiful being that's in front of me? And, you know, how does it help me to be knowing who I am for myself? So that's exciting. That's exciting. So, again, we're going to do the 10 steps of conscious relationships. So,
character.
Number one, and I don't know if these really, the numbers really matter. I think they do to a certain extent because by the time we get to the 10th, Harville really talks about the 10th being such a significant thing. And but number one is you realize that your relationship has a hidden purpose and it's there to be healing your childhood wounds. So I'm going to go ahead and read these because he really does a good point about talking about old brain and new brain and being able to talk about it. So he said, instead of focusing entirely on the surface needs and desires, we come to recognize that we have unresolved childhood issues that are underlining them. And we look at a relationship with our x-ray vision, our daily interactions can take on more meaning. So puzzling aspects of a relationship begin to make sense to us, and we have a greater sense of control. So I feel like if you start looking at when it comes to like what do I need or what does this person in front of me need as in friendship, what would that look like? I think it really helps to and you know we had a really great conversation on our last show. If you guys want to go back to that one, which is 387, just kind of. Put you back though, we had Matt Kahn, Michelle had been gifted with being able to go and see a two-day workshop that he was putting together that's actually going to premiere a little later this year. And some of the insights with that we really love, and I think we're going to go back to that next week. We'll start going there because, like, how many points did you have? I think you had 10. Was there 10 on that one too? I think there was. Tim's the magic number here for a lot of this stuff. Being able to, everybody's got the top five or whatever. That's like hot on the internet nowadays. You know, you go on YouTube and it's always like five things for whatever. We have time to look at five things. But
yeah,
I think that's what it is. Like more than 10. No, I can't do 10. 10 is my magic number. Anything more than 10.
Their
like, if there's 11,
span I would... cannot last up to 10 anymore.
If there are 11, forget it. I'm not going to watch it. It's not worth my time. Okay. I don't have that much time for that. But yeah, being able to look at all this and being able to have just a greater sense of recognizing the bigger picture. And how does that come back to knowing about myself and being able to do that? Because one thing I think that's really important to realize in a conscious relationship is to take responsibility for yourself. You're not looking for someone else to make you happy, for someone else have you have a sense of yourself. And whether it's loving myself or understanding myself, they're there to help you to put the pieces together, I think, sometimes. And I think it's one of our things, for me, I know personally that when it comes to sense of being able to ask for help, or just looking to seek to, you know, have someone else's opinion that I can say, well, what do you think? And knowing that it's information that I can bring into myself and being able to evaluate that. Not that it isn't necessarily true or false, but let me take that as information and what do I want to do with it? I think somebody else's insights can be very helpful sometimes when we reflect that back into ourselves and ask what's true.
Yeah,
that takes us
to number three, which is take responsibility for communicating your needs and desires.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so, so really great. So with that one, it says, in an unconscious marriage or relationship, we're clinging to a childhood belief that our partner is automatically and knows what we need. But in the conscious relationship, we accept the fact that in order to understand each other, we have to develop a clear channel of communication. And, you know, some of that goes really into, that's one thing that I really value about Michelle. Her and I have this really great, and it's taken some time because we've known each other for a few years, but we really have these agreements about how we can share with one another and what does that look like. And we're really good about saying, you know, I really need to share this with you right now and I'd like you to just listen or whatever. We're good at being able to say this is what I need. And we feel that, you know, we can be there for each other. But that's just really,
yeah, and,
you know, sometimes you just.
And to ask if we can offer. Because sometimes in conversations, like part of communicating the needs and desires is like, I just need you to listen.
Mm-hmm.
You
don't
know?
Say a word. no feedback.
Or
please.
I just
no
need to listen.
Yeah, because, you know, you just like hold your lips and I'm just going to say talk for here a second. Yeah, exactly. Okay. And we're really good about being able to laugh with one another. And I think that's, you know, that's one thing that Michelle and I really, I love that her and I have shared some laughter yoga together and things like that. So it's having those kind of different experiences with one another that really give you the tools to be able to just have that more available in the way that you communicate and just interact with one another. You know, you could have these different tools that you bring to your experiences with one another. So whether that's, I don't know why, but I'm thinking like, you know, when people can learn to go out and dance together or just finding something that, you know, hobbies and sports and things like that that people share, I think it really deepens you and because it's something that you're moving and changing and, you know, doing stuff with each other. So the interaction and experiences are different for people. I think that's a really good thing to do. So another one of them is to create a more accurate image of yourself, of the other person in the relationship. He said, at the moment of our attraction to one another, we begin fusing with our with this person, and we're seeing them as especially when you're really attracted to someone, you see them as a caretaker, because we talked before in other chapters where part of our need when we're really attracted to somebody is we know that there's something within, and it's amazing that it's this reaction that we have. Of something that's going to help us heal or anything that we have from our past, especially with our childhood. It says, later on, we project our negative traits onto that person, further obscuring the relationship of, you know, what's really essential in reality. As we move into the relationship, we gradually let go of these illusions and begin to see the other person's truth. We see them not as our savior, but as a wounded being, human being struggling and to being then wanting to be healed. And then I think that's something too. When you know, with your when you're with having a relationship with someone long enough, and I think part of that's vulnerability. You know, when you're sharing with one another about what's going on in your lives and things like that, can really make a significant thing about the just the humanness of how we're all seeking to really, you know, be healed and to be known and to be heard. I think that's something that's really important with that. So anything with that one, Michelle?
Well, yeah, it raises your compassion. That's the most important thing. And you start mm-hmm. to see the other person with more humanity.
I think part of that, too, is you see yourself within that person. Part of it's maybe the oneness of that we all carry and are willing to share with one another.
Mm.
So number
yeah,
four,
it
you become,
nice you.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. You become more intentional with your interactions. I love this one. It says in an unconscious relationship, you tend to react without thinking. You allow the primitive responses of your old brain to control your behavior, and in the conscious relationship, you train yourself to behave in a more constructive manner. And boy, right off the bat when I heard that one, it's like, you know, do I choose to react or do I choose to respond? And responding, you definitely are making, you know, making choices. And I think part of that's from the heart, don't you? Instead of being from like your head, you're from your heart.
Well, actually, my experience is what happens is that your nervous system gets trained a certain way. When you're
mm-hmm.
a child, to react in a certain way. And even though you become intentional and you train yourself to respond in a different way, sometimes your nervous system has its own reaction and it goes there before you can do anything about it. Maybe you won't verbally or on the outside display something, but inside I find myself still reacting in the same way, like with my nervous system response. So I actually think this one is a little bit more complicated than it appears on the surface. And there's a lot of neurobiology around trauma that's being brought to the forefront in the last 20 years about how when you're in a traumatic experience, you hold that in your body. And they look at animals and how animals are able to dispel that immediately, and humans, typically, we don't. So just to let you know, this one may not be as easy as it seems.
Yeah, because, like, isn't there, there's a whole new practice nowadays where you actually shake when you've got
yeah.
a situation and you're wanting to release it. What do they call that? Do they just call it shaking?
Well, they call it... The release is called somatic, it's a somatic response. It's where the emotion gets held in the body.
Mm.
And there's many techniques
shake
to release
it.
Yeah.
Shake it really hard, that's what they call it.
Shake it off, isn't that like a pop song?
I think so, yeah. Shake it really hard. Well, it's like, and I think too, something to consider with this is that there are I don't know how many different updated versions of this book. I have the original, thanks to Michelle. She had an extra copy, and so this is like from the original. So that's a really good point that said, you know, and it was written about 30 years ago. So the fact that we're coming, you know, in the last 20 years, all these new things that they know and understand in a different way. That it'd be interesting to look at the current addition to this book and see if that would be still true. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that would be interesting.
That it might be a little bit different. Yeah, maybe I'd check with Amy about that because Amy's got the an updated version on that. So, number five is you learn to value your partner's needs and wishes as highly as you value your own. And I love this. It says, in an unconscious marriage, you assume that your significant other in life is to be the caretaker of your needs magically. But in the conscious relationship, you let go of this narcissistic view and divert more and more of your energy into meeting your partner's needs. And, you know, it's like, to me, that's almost like the golden rule, too. I treat others as I want to be treated. You
yes,
know?
But only if it's an offering, not if it's a obligation. And he teaches that mm-hmm. in some exercises later on.
Okay, and that's a good point, too. Yeah, because you shouldn't automatically feel like it's an obligation because like it totally loses
it. If it ever feels like that, it's better not to do it.
Run! Run for the hills. Okay.
No, that's the old brain speaking.
Oh, yeah, that's that flight thing that you agree you're not going to do anymore. Okay, that's chapter 7. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the next chapter. Okay. Number 7 is you learn new techniques to satisfy your basic needs and desires. It's during this power struggle, you're going to blame and
criticize,
and
attack,
all kinds of stuff.
Manipulate.
Yeah, all that stuff that we just don't want to do anymore in an attempt to coerce your partner into meeting your needs. When we move beyond this stage, we realize that our partner can indeed be a source for us, for ourselves, once we abandon our self-defeating tactics. Boy, that's really a powerful thing.
Yes, no
that's
longer
so
do we abandon ourselves, but we abandon our self-defeating tactics.
Right. And I think part of this, too, is over and over again in this chapter, it's about I'm willing to see something in a new way. I'm willing to learn. I'm willing to be open to having my perspective changed. That's
a really good point.
It's
risky. It's living with
risk. Yeah, to be a risk taker. And I think it's calculated with, how much can I feel comfortable with and having change. Because, change is scary. It can be scary. And being able to look at that and have it be, how can I take steps in moving into having something be different? And still know that I'm good and cool, and this is kind of fun because it's a little bit different. So that's cool, being able to have those things change. But that's really powerful to recognize that this person that's in front of me, is someone who's indeed a resource for myself. Like, wow.
This person I love isn't my enemy?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Thank you. You're so great. Even on a bad day, sometimes on bad days more than good days, actually.
Wow,
depending what's going on and how it all gets played out. Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. It's it's tempering me. It's helping me to mold myself into how would I be with my beloved? How would I be? And then having your beloved be yourself first and foremost, and then having that be that internal way, and then having it go external. I think that's really important to be able to make sure that we're looking from that perspective as well. So number 8 says you can search within yourself for the strengths and the abilities that you are lacking. This is one of the reasons that you were attacking your partner is that your partner had strengths and abilities that you lacked. Therefore, being with your partner, you have an illusionary sense of wholeness. In the conscious relationship, you learn that the only way you can truly recapture a sense of oneness is to develop the hidden traits within yourself. And boy, that's so true. Because it's, especially when you get into any kind of relationship counseling, they're going to say the only person you could change is you.
Well, it's the rediscovering of your disowned traits.
Yeah, yeah. And like we were talking about before, with this honeymoon phase of having it be this, because that's, you get into these relationships and you start putting things away that you used to love to do, I'm thinking Artist's Way with Julia Cameron, there's sections in there about being the hidden artist where you get into relationships with other people and you let them be the artist instead of you be who you just, having however you want to express yourself through your creativity. And that doesn't necessarily have to be in art. It could be in writing, it can be in cooking, it can be in relationships, it can be in all kinds of ways that you're creative.
It could just be being silly around the house.
That's pretty good. That's very creative. I've seen you be crazy, so I know that. Being playful and having fun, that's always a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really good. One thing that Michelle and I both really love to do is play games. And, sometimes the silly little kid game is actually, harder than it looks because it's a game. And then second of all, it really helps you to bring out your childlike wonder and your childlike play with one another. And, boy, we just have a really good time sometimes playing just simple games. So she's really great at going to yard sales and finding these cool little...
For ages 3 and up.
It's like, sign me up. Okay, I can do this. It's over 3. I'm good.
perfect age range to play.
It's really interesting too, because I know with my daughter Katie, we sometimes when she's felt down or whatever, especially when she got to a certain age, like a teenager, I would take her to the toy store and we would go to the baby section and just goof around and look at all the baby stuff. And she always felt better, and I always felt better. That's really good. I got a handout from my sister the other day, and that was one of the things that it talked about, was, doing these things that you did when you were a kid, and some of these little hobbies or games or whatever. It's something that brings you back to your childlike wonder, your childlike playfulness. And I think that's something that, as we get older, we kind of like, I'm an adult and I can't do that anymore. Well, that's when the honeymoon phase dies, is because, you have to, supposedly grow up. And it's like, no, we modify that to make it something where we can help to be relating with one another and have it be in a way that we can enjoy one another. That there's going
to
be changes.
And when you suppress and abandon that aspect, that playful aspect of yourself, then you look to your partner to make you feel good.
Mm-hmm.
And here we go into unconsciousness at that point. So this is,
right,
once again, taking responsibility for your own self.
Yeah, being able to, just have fun and color and just do all the different kinds of stuff. So, number 9, you become more aware of your drive to be loving and whole and united with the universe. He says, as part of your God-given nature, you have the ability to love unconditionally and to experience unity with the world around you. Social conditioning and imperfect parenting made you lose touch with these qualities. In a conscious relationship, you can begin to rediscover your original nature. And boy, that's really true. I'm thinking of when, going out in nature and allowing yourself to really be with nature. It's so amazing, and it really can help you to be able to let go of just things and seeing how the natural world just really just is there to embrace you and one another, and like seeing how they interact with each other, be it animals or, being out in gardens and things like that. It just can give you such a sense of unity and the awe of the world. I think that's really, really important. And then being able to take that and bring it back to your relationship and having a sense of awe and wonder about, who is this person in front of me? So, anything with that, Michelle?
No.
Okay. It's self-explanatory. I know. It's like, nope.
I
want
to get to
here.
Number
okay.
10, because I think number 10 is the crux of it.
Yes, it is. And that's one thing that Harville really talks about. So number 10 is you accept the difficulty of creating a good relationship. And in the unconscious relationship, you believe that the way to have a good one is to pick the right person. And in an unconscious relationship, you realize that you have to be the right person.
In a conscious
so
one.
As you, right.
You called it both unconscious.
Oh, sorry. Freudian slip. Okay. In the unconscious relationship, you believe that the way to have a good relationship is to pick the right person. The right person, I'm going to have the great relationship. When in reality, it's being that you realize you have to be that right person. There's a great story in here of a guy that's in having sessions with Harville. And he says he's really sad because he doesn't have any friends. And Harville stops and he said, well, you have to be a friend to have a friend.
Yeah, he says, that's right.
You know,
there are no friends out there for you to have because everybody out there is a stranger.
I love that. I love that. Everybody's a stranger. And like, how are you going to be receptive and relating to somebody? I just love that. I think that's so great.
And also he talks about that, it takes time and effort and being caring to develop the friendship. And he's, equating it to being in a marriage. Like it takes time. It takes tending. To create this kind of marriage, it just doesn't happen. It takes attention.
Right, very much attention, and it's making time for one another.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, it takes it from, it's interesting because the way we come into this world is that everything is externalized. We as a child. It's all externalized. The source of our frustration and the solution to our problems is outside of ourselves. Like if we're hungry, we scream and then we get fed. If we need to be changed, we scream and then they respond. So all of our frustration, you know, being hungry, is tended to by the solution that's outside. And so when we get into marriage, we tend to believe that, like, the source of the frustration is outside. The source of the happiness is outside. So no wonder we are in the way that we are in relationships. I mean, it makes sense. We do have to be taught to that it's an internal thing, because from a very young age, we were responded to in that way.
Yeah. And that's such a big aha moment when we realize that. So it's going to, like, you know, it give everybody a break about that. It's like, oh, we were just looking in the wrong direction.
Yeah, but it makes total sense.
Oh, yeah,
that
absolutely.
We were. And it makes total sense that now we change, you know, we just turn our neck a little bit and look in the other direction, and that makes sense, too.
It's funny when you say it's like, you know, someone like pick you up and they turn your shoulders and they go, okay, let's look this way. How's it now? Okay. Well, Michelle, he's like, we've done our 30 minutes. So I want to thank you so much. Oh my gosh. The next few chapters are going to be really awesome. There's going to be a whole chapter on talking about commitment and how it's a precondition for emotional growth. And I think that's something that will be a really rich chapter for us to talk about. And then another one will be on safety zones with relationships. And I think that's another really great, great half hour that we'll be talking about that too. But so next week we'll get back to Nat Khan a little bit and explore, spiritual consciousness and spiritual relationships from a little bit different perspective. So I look forward to that. So thank you, Michelle.
Thank you. I'm committed.
All right. She's committed. I'm committed too. But, you know, that's... They're coming with the white coats, but it's all good. So I will see you next time here at the cafe. Thanks for joining us.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the Transformation Cafe podcast. To learn more, visit transformation-cafe.com for show notes, guest information, and links to previous shows. You can also subscribe to the Transformation Cafe podcast on iTunes. Join us again next time at the Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul.